All right, we're back. You're listening to Radio Free World on CKUW 95.9 FM. I'm your host. My name is Jeffrey Young, and we're joined in the studio this afternoon by Penrose Dominic, who can you introduce yourself and tell the good people who you are?
I'm Penrose Dominic. I live in New Jersey, close to New Jersey. I am a teacher by trade, but I'm also a priestess from Haiti. Mm-hmm. And I'm 39 years old. What else would you like to know?
A priestess from Haiti. You're Catholic?
I'm a Vodou priestess.
Oh, okay. And can you tell us where your family is down there, where they're situated, and what your history with the country is?
My country?
Yeah.
Well, my family is mostly in Corfu. Hmm? I have a lot of relatives in Corfu, Haiti. And I also have family in the outskirts,
yep,
of in the mountain side. Mm-hmm. Tigouave and Gangouave. And that's where we have our church also, in Gangouave.
Mm-hmm.
That's where most of my family
and
is.
And Carrefour is sort of a suburb of Port-au-Prince.
Yes, Carrefour kind of is south of Port-au-Prince.
Yeah, and for the good people listening, what does it look like physically? How does it differ from Winnipeg?
Corfu.
Yeah.
Well, it's very mountain terrain.
Yeah.
Everything is almost uphill,
mm-hmm,
rocky.
No pavement.
No pavement, dry.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of pavement in the main road.
Yeah.
That's one road that runs through Haiti from north to south.
Yeah.
But Corfu has no paved road for the most part. The mm-hmm homes are close together and it's very crowded and hot and dry.
And it got creamed by the earthquake. It was it was closer to than Port-au-Prince.
Yes, because Corfu is closer to the epicenter than Port-au-Prince.
Yeah. So what happened then? What happened in Carrefour?
A lot of people lost their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate we didn't lose anyone.
Yeah.
It was a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't lose any members of our family. The my house is intact, but most of the homes got trampled, most of the churches, the schools.
Yeah.
No government building stood in Corfu.
Yeah.
We lost a lot of lives.
What happened? What was earthquake day for you?
I was not there.
No, you were not there. You were probably
I was
home
in New Jersey at work
when
I got the news.
Yeah.
And I ran home immediately.
Left. Yeah.
I left. I dropped everything, my job. My boss understood. I teach, so all the parents rallied together and supported me, paid my way to go home immediately to look for my relatives.
Yeah, and that took you 3 or 4 weeks to get home?
To get to Haiti?
Yeah.
No, it took me 2 days.
Oh, you went right away, and then I met you on the next trip. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And what did you find when you get there? What did your family do for the first day?
For the first couple of days, I would say I got there. The earthquake was on a Tuesday. I got there on a Friday,
mm-hmm,
that Friday following, and it was still dusty and dark, and we were still sleeping. Everyone was sleeping either in the backyard,
mm-hmm,
or in the front in the street.
Yeah.
You know, everything was just at a standstill, no mm-hmm movement whatsoever. I do though have to say I have a lot of respect for Haitian women. No matter what was going on, the women got up, they cooked, they cleaned.
Did the laundry.
They did the laundry and they took care of the children and they went to market,
mm-hmm,
the day after the earthquake, which is like, amazing.
Yeah. Well, one thing I noticed, maybe you can clue me in on this, all that washing was happening in brown, dirty water, but all the clothes were coming out very white. What's going on?
Take some skill.
What's going on?
It takes a lot of skill.
Yeah, because you would see this woman washing like 50, 60 shirts and one bucket of brown water.
Yes.
And they're all coming out like completely
elbow
white.
Elbow grease.
unbelievable.
It's one, they use one bucket of to soap up the clothes, to scrub it with their hand.
Yeah.
And then there's a bucket of clean water that's untouched until everything gets scrubbed, and then they rinse everything in that bucket
in that
of
water.
Clean. Yes.
Yeah. And there's a lot of bleeding involved. I did some Haitian-style laundry and
I bled. Beat on the rack and
Yeah, absolutely. So, and your first trip back in afterwards, let's see the way, and you cross the border, you go through what's basically the desert for about an hour and a half, and then you get to the edge of the city. What were your first impressions of seeing stuff down?
Is this on my second trip when
first
I met
trip.
You? First trip, I couldn't see anything. I have to tell you, I don't even remember because I was in shock.
Okay.
It was total shock. I didn't get on a bus because there were no bus service from the Dominican Republic at that time. Someone met me, at the border, and then we drove down.
And then you got driven in,
Yes. Well, not drive, by motorcycle.
Yeah. Oh,
right on, And Port-au-Prince was virtually unrecognizable for me. I was in shock. I can't even tell you. People were still walking around the street bleeding. Dead bodies were still laying next to
us. Everywhere,
So the smell of...
Yeah, and what goes through your head, though? Because you're going home, and here's your home. Do you know what I mean? I've visited some of these places, but I've never seen the places before they're destroyed. So for me, I couldn't contextualize what was gone.
If you can imagine the end of the world.
Yeah, it's basically what it looked like.
Yes, like they dropped an atomic bomb and everything.
The living conditions in a lot of Haiti were pretty piss poor to begin with. What effect did this earthquake have on the people living in poorer communities, the ones with lower houses that didn't generally die as much?
Well, unfortunately, most of the people who lived in the poor are gone. Those homes are gone.
Yeah.
A lot of the people survived because the homes were not made out of concrete.
Yeah.
But they're still in the tents as we speak. They're still living under tents out of sheets. It's not protecting them from the elements at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's still hot. It's still wet. If it's raining, they get wet. They have to stand up.
Yeah, and we're a month away or a month and a half off from the next hurricane season as well.
Yes. You know, so their lives have gotten worse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, instead of one plate of food, I guess they have nothing.
They share, yeah.
They share half a plate of food.
Yeah.
And they're relying on aid from international help.
Which in a lot of situations was the case before the earthquake as well.
Yes.
That a lot of Haiti was aid reliant.
Yes, but for some reason the earthquake... But it's this atmosphere of urgency.
Yeah.
For both Haitians and the International community.
Yeah.
Like urgent. This has to. And a lot of places have gotten better because of this.
What positive impacts has it had? Aside from it definitely relieves some population stress on Port-au-Prince.
Well, oh yeah, duh. Yeah. positive outcome, I would say they learn now not to build the way that they used to.
Yeah.
And we have Habitat for Humanity building, not brick homes, but very nice homes made out of wooden cottages. Yeah. Cité Soleil is being redeformed. It's no longer Cité Soleil. Yeah. They don't even want it to exist anymore.
Oh, really? Huh?
Yes, and it's gotten into the diaspora. The Haitians, like myself, who live outside of Haiti, it woke us up to say, you are going to lose your homeland. So if you don't stand up and do something about it, if you don't get involved with your own home. A lot of the American Haitians, Canadian Haitians, they are really getting involved now in their own business.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the most positive aspect of this whole thing. You know, people like my kids who are standing up for Haiti.
Can we talk about Cité Soleil a bit? Because I don't think we've ever had a proper, aside from me, from there. So we've never had a proper description of the place, the conditions, and the lives lived. Cité Soleil is a globalization slum.
Wow. Before the earthquake, Cité Soleil was... They called it downtown Vietnam in Haiti.
Yeah, and there's just over a million people. And it's lying at sea level on the waterfront.
On the waterfront, and there's no address. There's nothing. I can't even explain it to you.
It's no infrastructure.
Like no infrastructure whatsoever. There's nothing, and children are walking around half naked.
It's a shanty town
It's almost like the dumps that you have the dumps where you put your garbage.
Yeah.
Just imagine you have little tin houses on top of the garbage that's exposed to begin with.
Yeah.
That's Cité Soleil.
Yeah, and is it safe to say it's the poorest of the poor?
Yes.
It tends to be people with nothing.
With nothing, because if you are in the outskirts, in the mountains, mm-hmm. you would think those people have nothing. Well, they have the land.
Yeah.
They can you know, yeah. grow food.
Yeah.
They can
where they're from, at least. Yeah.
At least where they are on yeah. the land, yeah. versus in Cité Soleil, where you have nothing.
Mm-hmm. So clearly in Haiti's future development, Cité Soleil it's got to go.
It needs
to be cleared.
Yes.
How do you clear that million people? How do you get them to return to where they're from? How would you possibly even begin that?
I think a lot of the land should be redistributed because yeah. a lot of it is government owned property mm-hmm. and there's no reason. A lot of it is barren and unpopulated. Unpopulated.
Yep.
You have
yep.
all this wasted land, mm-hmm. like up on the mountains of Kinskorf.
Yeah.
You have all this wasted land in St. Mark, yeah. up on the hills.
Yeah, populated. And that's good agricultural land that's still,
yes,
that's not deforested yet.
If you really know what you're doing, you can teach the population to grow food and to take care of mm-hmm. their land. Give each person a tiny, not give, do it like in the United States.
Yeah, let grant
them
pay, or mortgage.
Yes,
yeah.
let them pay something per month and, yep. you know, to live on the land. And if they know they're taking care of it, they have to pay for it, they'll take care yep. of it better.
See, this is something that we found in Haiti as being a big barrier to their development as well. And I'm not much of a capitalist, but there's no such thing as mortgages there.
Unfortunately, yeah.
So basically you have to buy outright or you don't buy. Is that the situation? Like, if you cannot afford the house and you don't buy the house?
There is a droit donné or something like that. I
yeah.
think they call it something you pay once a year if you feel like.
Yeah.
You know, because nobody's really after maybe 30 years, they'll come after you and say, if they want that property,
yeah.
they say, well, you haven't paid maybe for the past 10 years.
Yeah.
But there's no mortgage. There's no, I don't know how to say, there's no responsibility for the land you're living on.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
no such thing. You don't have to
yeah.
pay for anything. And then that means that money that you would be paying the government to take care of the property, the
mm-hmm.
streets and the
yeah.
gutters that you know, the area that you live in, you can't go and tell the government you need to come and pave this road.
You're
you didn't pay taxes.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
didn't put anything towards that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
and there's a big difference between, I guess we'll call it the rural-urban divide. Can you explain the rural-urban divide in Haiti? Because the cities are terrible places, just absolutely unlivable, terrible places.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go into the countryside, and it definitely has a very strong paradise aspect to it. There's clear flowing streams, and
mm-hmm.
it looks like paradise. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
There's bright colored birds,
and the people are nice.
Water flowing out of rocks, and the people
yes.
are sweet, and they want you to stay there forever. Why the difference?
Well, I think corruption. If you go yeah. into the city, you're greedy, you're corrupt, there's no job, so therefore you become desperate, you're going to rob someone or, you know, live your life totally differently versus when you're, like I said before, when if you're living off of the land that belonged to your grandparents or your parents, it is your land,
yeah.
you have responsibility towards that land, you grow your own food, your own corn, you raise your own livestock.
Yeah.
So therefore, you have that sense of peace.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that in the city because you have to pay for everything, and everything is, you know, crazy and expensive.
Historically, is Haiti a rural, decentralized population historically?
Historically, yes.
Historically, yeah.
yeah.
So what has led to the opposite being the case? Why the crowding into the three cities?
Because everything was right there in Port-au-Prince. You need a doctor, you have
yep.
to travel to Port-au-Prince.
Yep.
You need your children need to go to school, you have to travel to Port-au-Prince.
Yep.
You need papers, birth certificate.
Any official paper, you need to travel to Port-au-Prince.
So therefore, young people would just go to Port-au-Prince
yep.
and stay.
Yeah, because there's no government offices in other cities for normal government things. You can't get a
no.
driver's license in St. Mark.
No, you can't.
You have to go to Port-au-Prince. Yeah.
You have to go to Port-au-Prince.
Yeah. And so what effect does that have on the whole country then? Because for a lot of those people, they're not going to Port-au-Prince. They have no means.
It depends. If the person is in their 50s, 60s, 70s, there's no reason for them to travel to Port-au-Prince.
Yeah.
But if you're a 19-year-old girl or a 19-year-old young man who wants a job or who wants to change your life, you will travel to Port-au-Prince because you need a marriage license or something, and most of them stay.
Yeah.
And that's what attributed to that overpopulation.
Why is Port-au-Prince so brutal on old people? We notice that old people are not out and about in Port-au-Prince. The older folks we found in St. Mark said, you know, I haven't been there for 10 years. I can't go there. It's like physically difficult for them to take the bus, do the transfers and whatnot. Why? What is it about Port-au-Prince that's so difficult?
Because it takes 4 hours to go from point A to point B.
Oh, at least, yeah.
Because of the traffic and the noise and the... It's crazy.
Aggression. There's a lot of aggression.
A lot of aggression. People bumping into each other.
Yeah.
When you put 7 million people in the size of Quebec, this is what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're going to take a quick musical break. We're going to listen to a little bit more of the Boukman experience. We've had various Boukman folk on the radio several times. Do you want to explain for the listenership the significance of Boukman experience to Haiti culturally and some of the ground they've broken?
Wow, Boukman experience is very, very important to our culture because people like myself in my age, Boukman experience exposed the culture to the young generations. It brought the voodoo music out in the outside, on the open, and have it appreciated internationally as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Boukman experience is very important.
All right, we're back. You're listening to Radio Free World on CKUW 95.9 FM, University of Winnipeg Radio. I am your host, Jeffrey Young, and we are presently joined in the studio by Penrose Dominic, who's here to talk to us about Haiti and hopefully for the second half of this interview, some of the cultural and religious practices in Haiti. Penrose, welcome back to the radio this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
Can you please explain to the good people what you just explained to me about that last Boukman track that played?
Oh, this song is dedicated to a spirit called Cousin Zaka, Azaka Mede, Azaka Gwili. Cousin is the patron god, or you should say spirit of agriculture. He is called Minis Azaka Gwili. He's a minister of agriculture. And in my circle, if you want to have a good harvest, if you want to work the land, if you want to develop your land, you have to invoke. You have to go to Azaka Gwili, Minis Azaka Gwili, so he can give you passage so the elements can help your crops to grow. And we often say if someone does not understand or invoke Minis Azaka Gwili, you cannot develop Haiti.
Yeah.
he's the Minister of Agriculture.
Yeah, you don't have the background and support required. can you explain the difference between... the kind of Christian pie in the sky, single dude makes all the decisions and creates everything, God, versus the voodoo law?
Well, in the voodoo religion, we do believe in one creator.
Mm-hmm.
But this one creator, what happened to him is that it exploded, or what happened to it, this energy just got so much, so vast, so strong that it just, boom, it exploded. And then in the explosion, there are different particles, different parts of God. And the Vodou Loa, they are parts of God, but they're demigods.
Yeah.
You go through them so you can, they help you with your journey towards becoming like God.
They're parts of gods, but they're also inherent to individuals, yeah?
They're in everybody.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you, Jeff, you part of God. I'm part of God.
Yeah.
Everyone has, you know, elements of God. We all God.
Yeah.
We just smaller, you know. It's like we were a rock, but you belong to that mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Your job is to go to be part of the mountain again.
Yeah.
That's how I believe.
So can you say in a way that it's impossible to convert to voodoo because you already are?
Me?
People generally?
Oh, it's not.
Even whether or not they may know, practice, or observe the same things.
Impossible to convert to voodoo?
Yeah, because you already have in you all those things.
Well, it's not. You don't do voodoo. Voodoo does you.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's not about converting. It's deciding whether or not you want to practice, to take this religion and practice it in your life, and, you know, install it in your lifestyle.
Yeah.
As an everyday practice, you know, as a voodooism.
But a lot of different religions follow a line of you do it like us or you're wrong. And voodoo does not seem to do that.
No.
And the same way whatsoever. So how does it interface with the other religions? What's its kind of take on them?
We don't judge. Yeah. We don't judge. We only know that the other religion is religions. A lot of it now, modern religion, is very man-made and man-ruled. Yeah. And it's about what idea some guy had in 1922, and then he came up with this, or
looked in a hat, or yes, farmed in Germany, or whatever.
Yes,
yeah,
yeah. You know, this is my idea. This is what I want for my life. So therefore, my family is doing it. My community is doing it. If you're not doing it, you're wrong.
Yep.
So it became taboo. It became religion.
Yeah.
But God never established any religion.
Yeah.
There's never been that.
Yeah, yeah. As it was. Yeah. Yeah. He's God. He's not a religious leader.
No.
Yeah. There's been a lot of talk, started Haiti side. It's even been in some of the media otherwhere. What word can I use legally on the radio here? some asshat in the West, in, I think it was Edmonton or Calgary, published an op-ed saying that the reason Haiti is so far behind in development compared to the Dominican Republic was because there's voodoo in Haiti.
Oh, really?
He actually said that, completely missing all the Dominican voodoo.
Okay.
Blaming voodoo for the lack of...
So he forgot about Santeria.
He forgot about Santeria, okay. Yeah. And United States. He forgot about New Orleans, too. Like, he forgot about a lot of voodoo in making this. And as well, both on and off island, there's a lot of talk after the earthquake about you being responsible for the earthquake.
Yes, I know.
Pine Rose having brought on the earthquake and all this sort of crap.
Me and my Loaz.
What do you make of that?
Well, I just shake my head when I read things like this. So Pat Robinson from the United States, who says, you know, Haiti made a pact with the devil.
There's a lot of that sort of thing around this town.
You know,
some might even be listening, some frightened Christians.
Unfortunately, I have to disagree with them, because if I'm going to make a pact with the devil, I would not have Haiti. I would have skyscrapers, and I would have money, and I would have power, at least for a time, and then I would give my soul up after death.
Yeah.
But why would I suffer for my life just to go back and give my soul up to the devil again after the whole suffering?
Yeah. On the face of it.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of it has to do with not miseducation, but uneducated people. I think it has to do with fear.
Yeah.
And a lot of Christian churches or people, I'm not going to attack one religion.
Yeah.
But people are afraid of people who don't look like them, who don't act like them, because you can't control someone who's not like you.
Yeah.
You can't control. You cannot come into my house and say, Penrose, I don't want you to dress this way. I don't want you to do this because I don't have to bow down to your God. My God looks just like me.
Yeah.
My God sounds just like me. My God lives inside of me. And when my God wants to manifest, my God enters my body and does what I ask of them, because you don't serve anything that doesn't serve you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it that's the fear they don't understand. And, and Haitians, because of their voodoo, they've always been very fierce, very egoistic, very, very, you know, strong-minded people. Mm-hmm. And it's all because they know Papa Ogu will be there, and they know Dambala is there. So enable to for you to control someone with such strong will is to tell them you're a devil worship.
Yeah.
You're doing this wrong.
Yeah.
But who's to say what's wrong and what's right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's to say what's wrong and what's right?
I think the situation is that the Christians present themselves, you know, they've got a lot of money. They've got a lot of real estate. They have a lot of power. They have a lot of community around them. And it's almost like it makes good business sense to sign up and become Christian. It's almost, well, no, it directly looked like me, especially looked to me, especially in St. Mark, like the religion really had nothing to do with it. There's no, I even want to say this openly, there's no spiritual aspect to any of the evangelicals on the island of Haiti. They're there as vampires, basically.
Listen, there is no spirituality in the church.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say it. There's no spirituality in the religion churches out there.
Yeah.
It's just religion. It's just blind faith.
Mm-hmm.
There's no spirituality. There's no love.
Mm-hmm.
And if God is love, you know, love is unconditional. You're supposed to love me no matter what I decide to do. You're supposed to love me no matter what I call God, what name I give, what face I give God. So therefore, there is no love in the churches. And there's no acceptance.
This isn't how the Haitians have been practicing their Christianity, because over the past, I guess it's been about 2 or 3 months now, there's been a lot of traditionals killed.
Yes.
And a lot of traditional religious leaders killed. Can you talk about that?
Well, after the earthquake, there was the cholera outbreak.
Yeah.
And they were blamed for, they're saying it was a magical powder.
But yeah, that it wasn't the sanitary conditions in Haiti. Hell no.
No, it wasn't even I'm telling you, the UN dumped the feces in the water.
Yeah, because they were slobs. Yeah, but
they dumped the whole huge tankers of fecal matter in the water, and that made the people sick. And they went and they killed the Haitian people, the uneducated, you know, fearful, crazy people who just converted, went and they blamed the Vodou priestess, and they killed 45 practitioners of Vodou because they blamed them for something scientifically proven.
The situation with the cholera, I spent my summer around there, and it was bound to happen anyways, whether the disease was introduced or not, just because of the amount of garbage and disgusting kicking around.
How many
dead people were up it and all that sort of stuff? How did it get to be that way? Because I know for a fact that Haiti has not been like that throughout history.
In
terms of garbage and care for the land, how did it get to be that way?
I have no idea. I cannot answer that, because from my being 17 and looking at Haiti to be a clean place to now looking at Haiti, you can't even step.
It's an open garbage dump.
It's an open garbage dump. No recycling, because you're using a lot of imported things also, material.
Yep. Yep.
Plastic is introduced, and styrofoam is introduced, and we didn't have that before. You have your palm leaves and you don't know how to dispose. They don't know how to dispose of that.
Yeah.
And it's either burned up, which is creating pollution, or it's dumped in the side of the road or on the side, and then it mounts. After 10 years, it became uncontrollable.
We had a discussion last night, or maybe it was this morning, I don't quite remember, over whether or not some of my volunteers who completely sucked because of not being comfortable in a different culture. And I kind of pointed out that, well, Haiti isn't a different culture. It's America. It's kind of like the logical end of American cultural and economic practice. You sort of agreed with me. Can you explain that to the listenership, the ways in which, in a lot of ways, Haiti is the end of the American project?
Well, because the turn of the century, decade, Haiti has become very Americanized.
Yep.
The music is Americanized. The boys wear the pants falling off their...
Yeah. They like to hold their parts.
Yes, and the language has changed. Whatever they see on TV, they're thinking, because everyone's dream is to leave Haiti and travel to the United States.
Yep.
That's all everybody's working
for. Or Montreal.
I don't know about Montreal. You know, there's still a little bit of different. Canadian Quebec Montreal culture is still not non-American.
Oh, no, definitely
for the most
not.
Part. So they want to travel to Montreal to study.
Yeah.
To be a French-speaking doctor.
Yeah.
But they want to travel to the United States to be a rapper, a basketball player, which is something different. And they want to be movie stars. And they've lost, I think, Haitians. You can't find a true Haitian anymore.
Yeah.
Haitian, the cream of the crop, I should say, has either traveled outside of Haiti.
Or fled to the hills.
Or fled to the hills or dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
a lot of the people that leave Haiti don't find what they're looking for. In the American side, a lot of them have very, very hard experiences and tend to go home. It was all explained to me a lot in Haiti that the crime rate, the you're going to get robbedness and stuff like that, a lot of it had to do with these diaspora returning, having culturalized themselves to basically American gangster rap. Is that true?
Well, it's not true. It's true, but it's not. It's true that, yes, they have Americanized themselves. They're all gangster rappers. They call themselves G's, just like in the
United
States.
Yes, they do, yeah.
And these young people, but these young people were not, they didn't leave the United States by choice.
Yeah, they're deported.
Yes, if you commit a crime, whether you are a legal American resident or not, you commit a crime, they just send you back to
Haiti.
You're
straight back to Haiti. Yep.
If you see, I've known American citizens that have been deported, you know, to back to Haiti for committing certain crimes. So those people, the same crimes they were committing here in the United States with fear of being arrested, with fear of the law, there's no law to fear in Haiti anymore.
No.
They're just doing it because, hey.
Yeah. And that's a good point. There is no central authority in the country. It's not the first place I've lived without a functional government. How does that affect safety? It seems to me that in a lot of ways, especially in the St. Mark context, it entirely enhances it because it puts it in the hands of the community.
Of course. Yeah. There's no repercussion. There's no, who's going to arrest you?
Yeah. So there's less crime because people are more afraid of the community response to what they might do wrong.
Yes. Now you're afraid because you if you run over this child, you don't have to be afraid of the police because you won't make it out of the town.
The immediate people.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, Penrose Dominic, we're just about out of time. I'd like to tell all the people that you're giving a talk tomorrow, a public talk on voodoo and on Haiti. It's taking place at the Mondragon Bookstore and Coffee Shop. There will be various announcements and information going out the next day, especially down around the Mondragon. So everybody is invited to come down tomorrow, early dinner hour, around 5 o'clock, to the Mondragon to hear what you have to say to our communities. We'd like to thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you for having
me. And we look forward to whenever the next is. All right, and that's all the time we have today for Radio Free World. Radio Free World's heard every Friday at 1 p.m. here on CKUW 95.9 FM, University of Winnipeg Radio. If you have questions or comments or criticisms, please hesitate. I'm your host. My name is Jeffrey Young. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for Mercy of Slumber coming right at you in a few moments.